You can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out. Move mountains. We gon' walk it out and move mountains. And I silence is a quiet, and it feels like it's getting hard to breathe. And I know you feel like dying, but I promise we would take the world to its feet. Move mountains, bring it to its feet.
Listening to Recovery Radio on www.enlightenradio.org. This is Miss Andra Day. Each other. But I will pause there with Andra Day and introduce you to the Enlightened Radio Recovery Program. I was wondering where my friend James Boyd is, but I think something's happened this morning. Anyway, he gave me a thumbs up last night, but I don't see him yet. Anyway, and he's usually right on time, so it's possible that the vicissitudes of life for us senior citizens has intervened somehow, and we have a lot of things we can't control. that's one of the lessons of long life, or longer life. Well, I can't do anything about that. Well, what about this? Well, I don't know. We can try. Anyway, welcome this morning to Enlightened Radio. And in James's absence, and he may show up at any time here as soon as his whatever interrupted him is over. But when I'm in doubt about, you know, exactly where to start on a program sometimes, and I'm thinking about it, I usually resort to a poem. And I don't know why. I mean, my early youth, I had a time when I was planning on being an English professor. Well, it wasn't much of a plan, just someone asked me, since I was studying English literature and I liked it, I liked writing about it, you know, so I was, you know, oh, man, maybe I can be a literary critic or something, but I was always looking, I think, in literature for, I don't know, a more everyday kind of understanding of the ideas that the writer was writing about or the characters that he was imagining. Probably all of them versions of himself or herself. I think that's part of the writing process. I mean, yes, they, if you go to write a novel, you might, you know, use aspects or attributes of a person that you know. But the person that you know in your brain is not actually the same as the actual person. It's as much you as it is them. And so even when you're borrowing from your experiences in life to write, they're always, of course, filtered through your senses, which are not. That doesn't mean it's untrue, not at all. But it just sort of there's never the ability to completely suspend your belief that there's a difference between the so-called real world, the things that you see, and the reflections of themselves that are your vision of it, or smell, or touch, or sound, or any other telepathic or whatever possible sensations that you might experience. Anyway, so poetry helps with that bridge, I think, sometimes. And because it always seems to be moving. There's the classic, Buddhist, I think it's Buddhist or Zen. There's definitely Buddhist versions, of the the nine blind men trying to identify an elephant. And, each focuses on some part of the, quote, elephant, end quote. With the limited with what they can touch, or feel, hear, smell, but not what they can see. And of course they use their knowledge, experiences to find out, more about the, quote, elephant, end quote. And one grabs a hold of the tail, and thinks that it's basically perhaps a giant broom. The animal has a big broom. And another one, is focused on these, on something that looks like a massive horn, right? On a massive, some kind of shark bearing thing. And another one says, "Whoa, oh my God, they're on the ear, but it looks like a wing. It must fly." One after another, they're partial perceptions take form. And of course, none of them are accurate. From what point of view? Not from theirs. They're all arguably accurate from theirs. But from some other external third, someone that can see another dimension of experience, has a totally different view. Are there parts of the elephant that the even the person with sight is missing? Well, that's the the theological or ontological question that the parable is asking. But in this case, we'll take something simpler, a lighthouse. And I always like the lighthouse as a metaphor, and in reality, there's a very practical and perhaps cosmic function that lighthouses serve. They come in the category, by the way, of what's called public goods, which it's very difficult to charge people or find a way to meter the light that they might see or miss. The value of what they miss. So it's not possible to really charge people for the benefits they receive from a lighthouse. At least not, you know, by use. I suppose you could pay for its creation and maintenance by a general tax, public employee of some sort. But, you're not going to be able to charge the customers. So, well, and that's a public good in the, or it meets a couple of the standards for a public good in economistics terms. But rather than focus on that aspect of the lighthouse, I'm going to consult Lewis Jenkins, and because it opens the door to talking about recovery today. Light flashes across the water. It is gone. Like headlights across the wall of a dark room where someone is lying awake. It happens so quickly. No way to take back the things that were said. The sun drove headlong into a train. Your daughter is in a Mexican jail. It's a house passed at 80 miles an hour. Did anyone live there? The night, the sea, the wind and the rocks, the terrible currents offshore. It is good to see the light across the water. It is a warning. This is a place where the land ends and the water begins. Or the water ends and the land begins. Either way, it's dangerous. Anyway, I take that as my sort of initial shot across the bow here this morning. And I want to take up, if I could, some information about addiction. I was just looking it up today, actually. And so let's, here's an article basically come, there's a thing called Wallet News, but it's basically just reviewing some of the latest data on drug addiction. So, first of all, we have, where did this data come from? Okay, so we're going to, let's just review this. Drug abuse has a long and storied history in the United States, and the United States has so-called, supposedly, been at war, quote unquote, with it since 1971 under the Nixon administration. Actually, I doubt that ending the drug scourge was actually the purpose of those acts, since it didn't work, one. And two, it did work to disenfranchise a whole lot of African American youth, as well as quite a few other youth as well, from ever voting again. And so it had that effect, and I think from the Nixon administration's point of view, that would have been considered a success. Anyway, despite the country's efforts to fight the drug problem, the problem has gotten steadily worse, and is been actually exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic. There were over 100,000 drug overdose deaths in the 12-month period ending in April 2021, up an astounding 28.5% from the previous year of 2020. Anyway, but given the uncertain future and the lack of, the zero progress to date, it's fair to wonder where drug abuse is most pronounced and in which areas at most risk. Anyway, so here we go with the number one state in drug addiction, meaning the most drug addicted, is West Virginia. It's just, it just is very difficult to deal with it. We're broadcasting here from Bolivar, West Virginia, in the belly of the beast as far as drug addiction goes, actually. And what is it that accounts for the drug addiction? What is it? Well, we can look at some of the other states that are very similar to us and see if there's a similarity. Well, the next highest rate of addiction is the District of Columbia. Well, man, it's going to be hard. I mean, West Virginia is like Whitey Burl. The District of Columbia is it's mostly African-American, but it's certainly, I would be surprised if it was not. I'm not looking it up right now. And it's urban, not rural. So, hey, there's no comparison that one might reasonably make, except what about poverty? Huh. Let's move on. Next in line, Arkansas. Whoa, another kind of mostly rural state. Kind of in the West Virginia category. Weird. Followed by Missouri. Missouri, also very lot of rural areas in, there is St. Louis and Kansas City, so we'd have to dig down a little bit more to see whether or not my theory. But let's go down to the least addicted, Minnesota, Hawaii, Utah. These are heavily rural areas. Iowa, North Dakota, Nebraska, Virginia. Well, yes. And here we have the wealthier, more urbanized states. I don't see a consistent pattern in terms of the states. There are, I would say, poorer, but poor is a relative term. You got to ask yourself, what do you mean poor in terms of the amount of wealth that it creates? Oil states create a lot of wealth. West Virginia creates a lot of wealth from mining coal and natural gas. Compared to other states, and yet the level of income and living conditions in these states are, in both Louisiana, for example, and in West Virginia, it's not great. So we don't have an other, but nonetheless, just from the standpoint of West Virginia, we're number one. We're the most addicted state in the entire country. Anyway, so the way you get drug addiction points in this particular survey is you first you take the share of teenagers who use illicit drugs in the past month. All right, you know. And then you have the share of teenagers who tried marijuana before age 13. That's a measure. That's one of the measures. If that goes up or down, etc. Now we have the share of teenagers offered, sold, or given an illegal drug on school property in the past year. How many of those were there? Okay, so these are some of the measures they're using. Okay, share of adults who used illicit drugs in the past month. Let's see. Of course, now how are these statistics going to be changed when you're in a state that is now legally selling marijuana products and some psychedelic mushroom products, I believe. Not quite sure how that affects the some of these measures. Okay, but you can see that it's sort of cut a rule. It's also going to use drug and health number of adults who get treatment for illicit drug use in the past year, number of substance abuse treatment facilities per 100,000 people using illicit drug, blah, 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 blah. I don't see the data. There must be data also. Oh, yeah, for law enforcement data, number of arrests, violations of prescription drug monitoring laws, let's see, maternity drug policy, and then, you know, the states with employee drug testing laws. So there's a lot of different sources for data. And it's not entirely clear to me that this site can be 100% relied upon for the way that it weighted the data. For example, do you weight the teenage data more than the adult data? You know, a lot of sticky statistical questions one might ask there. But nonetheless, I mean, it's this is not the only measure or report in which West Virginia has come out at the high end of those states infected with large-scale opioid addiction in particular. All right, so that's just going to lay that on you, those of you who are listening here from West Virginia. It's a very tough thing. All right, well, let's turn on a little tune here to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen,
It's good to see that James has joined the program. I was winging it here. And we'll bring a little pause here to Taj Mahal and Keb Mo doing their little anthem of hope. I love it. With John Batiste on, I guess that's on the late night show there. All right. And well, James, I already covered a report that indicated that West Virginia is again number one in drug addiction nationwide. And I was looking at this site. It was using a mix of measures. Like it had, you know, law enforcement reports, hospital reports, pharmacological reports. School, I mean, numbers of teenagers who have had an illicit drug. I don't know what all that includes. I mean, for example, some states, I think marijuana and mushrooms and stuff are illegal, and some others, apparently, they're not. So I don't know how that data works. And I don't know also how they weighted it. You know, like they apparently double weighted reports of the number of children 13 or under who had tried some drug, okay, illegal drug. And then they triple weighted, I don't know, adults who had indulged in the past month. I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, I don't know what the argument for double or triple weighting some particular. I mean, I know that it makes some sense, I'm sure, to weight some things more based on how big or small your sample in that category may have been. Okay, so I mean, if one is really big and deep, the sample, right, covers a lot of different kinds of people, a lot of people. Well, you might want to weight it more than one that's smaller. You might. I don't know. Anyway, so West Virginia, but by any measure, number one in opioid addiction. So, good morning, by the way. How are you doing? Can you hear me? Well, oh, there we go. Oh, can you hear me now? Oh, I can't hear you. Oh, this is going to be, I talked into the tape, but not, oh man.
Now I'm unmuted. You were muted the whole time.
I was, but I was actually talking into the tape. So, mm-hmm. You know, the tape was hearing me, but Zoom wasn't, you know. That's great. Good morning, James. Hi.
Good morning,
I apologize for any of the bad notice here about this morning, but anyway, I'm so glad that you were able to tune in here. So
yep, me too.
I was
calling yesterday. Go ahead.
I have a senior confession to make here.
Mm-hmm. Went swimming too much?
No, that's not it. I should set my phone monthly bill on automatic, but I don't for some reason, because I I never know whether I'm going to run out of money before the month's out, right? You know, so
same here.
And so it always happens, like on the end of the month now, you know, all of a sudden the phone's gone, you know, and people can't reach me and stuff. And so that was my fault.
I figured that was what happened. I do it. But my phone, it'll notify me. The Sprint, they send me a notification when my bill is due. it pops up on my phone. So who do you have? You have
Sprint AT&T. Well, I have AT&T, and I probably did, but I get so many text notifications from companies, and I
don't give you a grace period.
Oh, I don't know. It's a go phone. Right. They used to call it go phone. Right. It's a straight flat fee. I don't have any of those accounts that I used to have them, but my kids would start texting each other when one was in Canada, and we get a $500 bill. So, I just said, to hell
with
that.
That'll make you forget the phone.
To hell with that, But anyway, we didn't skip a beat. So even though I was muted on Zoom, I was rapping on about, you didn't even hear it, about the report that's out. Well, a report.
What?
That says West Virginia is number one, again, in opioid addiction. And in overall addiction. Now, I was mentioning that they have a number of measures that not quite sure, how they weight. Like I was saying, they double weight at the number of children 13 or under that have been reported using drugs. But I don't know whether that's just opioids or marijuana or cigarettes. Cigarettes are illegal at that age. I'm not quite sure how they're counting that. Okay. But anyway. And they also have other measures, like the reports of hospitals and the reports of law enforcement and, what's happening in the school system. Because there's a certain amount of incidents that take place in the school system that do get so there's a lot of data sources.
West Virginia and Virginia,
West Virginia is on top, and underneath us is the District of Columbia.
Yeah, the heroin. That's how they put together the heroin highway part.
They're totally different in terms of in almost all respects in terms of demographics, except for one, poverty. They're right aligned like that, West Virginia is like the white face of poverty, right?
Poverty. Mass poverty. So that's pretty... That's pretty amazing. That's astounding, actually, and it's got to be a wake up call for that community somewhere in all that dying and grievance and all that. It has to be some sort of wake up call. But I think there's not enough people waking up, and like you said, the demographics. And so when I start to look at those numbers, then more questions come to mind, this is definitely looking out of control, to say the least, right? Yeah. So they came, and they came in, and I'm going to try to relate the two. They came in and took over the police department in Paterson, New Jersey, Paterson, New Jersey.
Was it, or Newark? Or both, right? Wasn't it at different times? I remember Newark. I remember they took over the police department in Newark once.
No, not the citizens, but the government, the federal government, the state.
Okay. Right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, maybe.
Amen. The state troopers, all of that, it's out of control like that. And so West Virginia... State troopers need to come in and take over the leadership. the federal government, period. Because people, especially those who are just living in la-la land, you've reached the age where you worked out your job at whatever the biggest factory is down there, or whatever the biggest employer.
Right.
And you're going home, and you know, you got your tomato garden in the backyard and your flowers and everything, and you're retired, and you don't expect for your life to be an uphill battle after you've done all those years of labor and saving and preparing and planning. And all of a sudden, you got a system where you decided to live out your last days, a system that's run amok. And it's run amok by the muckety mucks. It's sad. I have family there, really, and yeah. It troubles me a great deal that even the people there who seem to be comfortable with those numbers and the poverty level and the status quo, they're being affected in a different kind of way by that kind of leadership. You know, those poverty levels and those levels of mistreatment, the prison system, all of it is tied in one big knot. And the person who's tying the knot is a system that is kind of like none other, because the numbers are like none other. That's why you reach the top. You're like none other in certain respects.
Hey, well, that's for sure, man. Hey, let me read you a statement by the GOP West Virginia chair, L. Gene McArdle. 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 Okay, she had a message. She had a message for people considering moving to West Virginia during her appearance on, I think, WCHS 580 Live. If you don't subscribe to the GOP's, MAGA-loving mindset, you can please go elsewhere. For example, here's a quote from her. Go live where you want to live. Practice what you want to practice, but you're not going to fit in well here. She's referring to people who are concerned about diversity and equality. And she had a suggestion. Well, they can go to California. They can go to New York. They can go to Chicago if they want that kind of atmosphere. Go on. Go nuts.
So West Virginia is the fifth poorest U.S. state with a median household income of $51,600. And the poverty rate is 14.6%. This is 2023.
Yeah, well, they moved up. That's actually an improvement, because they were the second poorest. Now they're the fifth poorest. That's why, man.
Yeah, well, that gives me hope. So that means that a couple of hundred more of my brothers and sisters got to go to prison and be beat to death while the numbers inchworm up their way up.
You know why that? But there's another possible reason why those numbers went up, and that is that a whole bunch of the poor people from the year before got so sick of staying here that they finally got the hell out and left, and now they're not counted.
So migration out of West Virginia.
Yeah, I think that could be
my different kind of self, I want to come back to West Virginia, because I feel like there's a good fight to be had. There's good trouble to get into down that way.
Well, that's
true.
You
know what I mean? And most of my friends up here, you know, and when I talk to them about the wonderful time that I spent in West Virginia, you know, the 17 years I was there, it was really great for me, because I've made some great friends and some really good connections. Right. But the backstory is always the best story. And the longer I was there, the more education I got.
Interesting.
What should be the driver and the and the motivation or the appetite in my life right now entails, it involves West Virginia. And I feel places like West Virginia, I'm not going to say West Virginia per se, but there are those pockets. You know, it's like you got a patchwork, you got a nice pair of pants on, but there's so many patches in it, and you've taken the patches and blended them in, and they're not the same material, and it becomes an irritant to your butt.
or a coat of many colors.
So, but the colors, man, I sounded like Sammy Davis Jr. that time, man. Did you hear that?
No, I don't remember. Now you're going pretty far back there.
Gosh. But my friend. So how has your week been? What went well? Let's talk about that part. What went well? Well, we're gonna leave out the phone bill. That didn't go too well.
No, I forgot to pay it. What are the
things that went well? What are the things that went well?
Well, I finally got my automation down, so it takes me about 10 minutes to turn the program into a podcast and publish it. So, mm-hmm. I've been written a lot of tools to do these things, and I finally mm-hmm. got it together to get that stuff actually online and working. And so,
okay.
So that's been great because, you know, I can sort of do this, you know, daily, early in the morning. And I'm sure there'll be time. I'll probably be some I can't do. But, you know, senioritis gets us in so many ways, right?
Yeah, but thank goodness for senioritis. I want some more senioritis. I want right. the extreme package. Yeah, I want the extreme package, but you got to be available to get it.
Well, I know, but then you have all the doctor appointments, and you know all you know your family. By the time you get to our age, is at least I know in yours in my case gets bigger, right? You got the grandkids, you got the whole. And there's always something going wrong, or right. Mm-hmm. I mean, both ways, basically.
What went well?
So I got my software working better. That's the best thing that happened this past week. Because it takes a lot of. I mean, I enjoy doing it just because, you know, I want to tell you, you can think about all kinds of things and become very educated about all kinds of social and. Political, right. economic, all kinds of other mm-hmm. issues. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can end up, no matter how much you know, there's going to be there's the big thing. The more you know, you don't know.
Yeah.
I think that's, yeah.
and
I, so, you know.
And to me, that's the amazing part of being right. available right. for, what do you call that thing when you get old?
Senioritis.
Yeah, right. Senioritis, being available, being around for that.
Right.
And for me, the information and everything that I aspire to every day to get right. inside me so that my filters can do what they're supposed to do, I want all of that information, but I don't. And also, while I'm gathering this information in my head, it's being not only stockpiled but categorized, and you know, it's being put in its place where I can kind of call it up and use it later on as far as my day goes. So when I wake up, I'm inspired. I'm by, you know, sitting up talking with you, and we're talking about the current events, and you know, because for me, when you have an appetite for information and you can discern about the information that you should keep in your life and the information you should get rid of. And we're set up so effectively that we can do this stuff. And so for me right now in my senioritis, I'm learning that as long as I keep the blood flowing right. That's why I like you when you say you're going swimming, like a lot, you know, because it gives senioritis a place to go down the drain, you know, because you sweat it out.
Yeah, well yeah, okay. Home,
and people are gonna not show up to talk, or people are not gonna get this thirsty for information because they're so thirsty for other things. I know. Yeah. I feel, even though my life becomes dysregulated on a daily basis for a short period of time, regulation is available to me now. And for everybody, a regulated life is not in the cards. It's only because you're fed so much chaos. You're given so many extra doses or extra helpings of this chaos. And, you know, it's available on every corner. It's available in every crevice and every crack of this country. You know, there's so much to be had that is negative, that we never give what went well a time to be nurtured, nourished, and recognized and authorized to be in my life. Like, what went well today? I'm right. Trying now, John, to start out with that. It doesn't always work every day, but you bring light, my friend.
Let me raise another question on the opposite end of the spectrum here. But which is the latest school murder in Nashville?
Oh yeah, pull that up. Let me get my teeth, John.
Okay, he's gonna get his teeth. Anyway, it's a.
My teeth, my coffee.
Oh, yeah, I thought your teeth. I just said you left your teeth. I have my teeth in the bathroom.
That sounds like
I can't stand wearing mine, so.
My teeth. Ooh. Okay, maybe go ahead.
Anyway, so there's another mass killing at a Christian school of some sort in Nashville, Tennessee. And the, I think there's, I can't remember how many are gone. It's six or seven or nine.
I'm sure it's six.
Six. Killed, including a couple of 9-year-olds. And the head of the school, apparently, as well, a woman. And so, you know, once again, there's this agonizing moment when the president, in this case, a guy that favors gun control, Biden, gets out there and says, "Well, I've done everything I can do with my authority."
I didn't hear that one.
And you contemplate, well, is there any case, any atrocity that you could put before the current Supreme Court in which they would not use it? Not only to avoid doing anything about the slaughter going on, but probably exploit it as a way to expand or remove any constraints on firearms in public, in this public square, you know, quote unquote. I keep thinking that in Dr. King's approach to, you know, politics and mass movement and stuff, that this would not be that difficult a question. Because he tended to say, well, you know, if you've got a social problem of some kind that, you know, is killing you. You have to find a way to get everybody to stop. Okay. And you got to, you know, and be unmoved.
Mm-hmm. That's right. steadfast.
And he, you know, built an army, basically, out of poor folks. That said, just basically sat down, you know. And it was not just one arena, one demonstration or one. I mean, it became a civil disobedience kind of tactic, mm-hmm. right? That if it has mass kind of support, it can be very, very effective. So I was thinking, okay, let's take a liberal community like Shepherdstown.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know how ultimately progressive it is, but it's liberal. I don't think that it's comfortable
choice.
With the idea of people walking into stores and restaurants with pistols on their hips, you know, even though the cops do it all the time.
All the time, yeah.
And now you have the latest tragedy. Certainly don't want them to. So suppose Shepherdstown decided, by the way, it's not a very big town, actually. You know, the actual geography is very small. I think the public middle school there is resident. Am I saying a middle school? It's elementary school. Yeah, I think it is in the city, the town limit, but that's it. It's sitting right on the border right there. So suppose you banned firearms in public in the town of Shepherdstown. Suppose the town did that. Now, right now, that would probably be ruled unconstitutional if it got to the Supreme Court. Okay.
You say fire alarms or smoke alarms? Fire alarms.
Firearms.
Oh, firearms.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're going to ban them. Firearms. All of them.
Ban them. Period. In the right. town, like, I think Dodge City, who was that? Wider? Yeah.
Right,
something.
Right. But yeah, including the cops,
including the police, right? Okay. You know. Yeah, but I think Wyatt had his guns though, didn't he?
Yeah, but he basically used it as a club. He didn't actually shoot anybody in Dodge. He beat him over the head, you know, because they were mostly drunk, right? That was what was going on. Right? I mean, you get off a cattle drive of 1,000 miles, and you the first bar you've seen. Come on, you know. I mean,
man, I'm gonna tell you something. When I was living down West Virginia, I met some nice people, like I said, but most of the white men, whenever you talked about guns, it was like the adrenaline rush. And if somebody comes to get my guns, I'm gonna, you know, it was like, I said, man, I hope nobody ever come down here and try to take these guns from these guys, because something is gonna happen, right? But on the other end of that, with you feeling like that, you shouldn't even have no gun.
Yeah,
we can't even take you to court. We can't even take you to court without having a shootout with you.
Well, my reply to people like that is really, no one's coming for your guns. I don't give. You
Nobody's
can have 10 million of them in your home, but you're not going to bring any of them into town. Mm-hmm, if you do, mm-hmm, we're going to shoot
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But Opie can't be. Yeah, but you can't have Opie with the key to the gun box. Opie can't have that. I'm
no,
sorry. Opie no, should not be. Don't
well,
let Opie.
I know, but you
and,
got.
And I know what scared ain't be. You know what scared ain't be? I'm going to tell you what scared. Aunt B came running in the kitchen. She was terrified out of her mind. She had ripped off her apron. You know, Aunt B always wore the jazzy stuff to work in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And she came running in and she said, Andy, that boy, something got into him and he jumping around. And he acting like the devil. He's acting like the Dickens. I think that was a word that Barney would use.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And A.B. went in there because A.B.'s hair was standing up on her head. But Opie had found an Elvis album, and he was dancing. And his friend from next door, the little black kid, who A.B. really didn't like in the house, you know, but they won't show you that on TV. And B, yeah, But he had a friend back there, Opie. And the boy had showed Opie how to dance. And Aunt B said that that kind of behavior was of the devil. That's what scared Aunt B. Scared the heck out of her. And she's still running scared. And so that was the story that was put out.
Right.
Whatever you do, if it has anything to do with whatever the gyrating and everything that was going on back there, yeah, it's going to turn these kids into awful people. And so that's what scared Aunt B.
Oh, I you know, nah, my grandmother had a different attitude, James. She thought that Elvis's hips were the most the sexiest things going, okay? And she tried to talk her husband, my grandfather, into starting dancing right there in the living room. And she says, now, why is Ed Sullivan not showing that boy's hips? You know, he cut it off at his waist. You know, I want to see it. Yeah, she was from West Virginia. You know, she was down Beckley way, you know, but. Anyway, yeah, I hear you, pal. I mean, it's just Aunt B. God, I hadn't thought about Andy and Aunt B for
forever, right?
Yeah. Opie turned into the probably second most successful Hollywood director in history.
I know, didn't he?
Ron Howard.
I love his movies.
I mean, he's right below Spielberg in terms of awards and stuff. Yeah.
I know. Yeah, I was talking to Vicky yesterday, I couldn't reach you. But she told me that anytime we do this on Mondays, that she'd be in her office. Well, she's probably still at home right now, and she would love to come on anytime so we could just talk on the phone.
Well, let's just get
so
her next. Can we just let's make a deal? Let's get her next Thursday. Can we do that?
Yeah,
because we're almost done with our hour here, and I don't want to go beyond an hour, you know. So.
Right.
But I wanted to ask you. Here's what I had in mind. Okay, I got stranded a little bit. You know, if the people of Shepherdstown sat down and demanded a gun-free town, as far as in the public, nobody has them in their car, nobody has them on their person. Okay, and if we sit here, we don't do business, any business, if we don't do this kind of a peaceful business, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And
Shepherdstown is perfect for that.
The students, you probably could get together a fairly decent student movement over the whole thing. And I think it would be, and I'm not sure whether, and on the other hand, I'm not sure whether Shepherdstown would end up being the better community than Charlestown to do it. Charlestown's a more mixed community, and more it would be a much more important symbol around the courthouse, you know, and the system of justice. That would be profound, okay? And we're going to disarm. You know, now it probably won't succeed in its first round or second, you know. It might not. But I think that if you develop a base, and that base can do something, right? You know, it can stand and it can stop traffic. It might catch... what's that? Mao Zedong, you know, he used to say a single spark can start a prairie fire.
Yeah, you sound like a light radio show that time. The talk radio. I used to love to sit and watch. That's a pretty good idea, John, I think, to a question to put out there.
Disarm.
There's a lot of...
Get all the churches debating it. You know, why shouldn't we disarm in public? Why shouldn't it be at least as safe as Wyatt Earp's Dodge City?
Just like they have Blue Law, the Sunday, you can't sell alcohol or something.
Right.
On a Sunday. And so maybe you start with a couple of days, that certain days you can't come in there with a gun. But I don't know, overall, without the guns,
any concession that you got would promote a better discussion about not having your school filled with dead bodies. Okay.
Right.
So, or other, you know,
level. And what about the ones we don't hear about? They're not mass shootings. They're just regular shootings in schools.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure the numbers are in the past 6 weeks.
It was a shootout here in Newark last night. They shot at the police. Some guys, some kind of street beef. But
yeah, right.
Think about it. What's the most important? I mean, one of the things that's on people's minds is gun violence. How has gun violence affected you personally? I know we're running out of time and we got to go, but yeah, you got a lot of stuff to talk about.
How are you going to raise taxes for the school system when people are actually starting to be afraid to send their kids to the school system? And by the way, this most recent one was a private school, private religious school, not just, the public schools.
It's subtle, right? It's subtle. So now it dispels the myth. Those public schools are just people, so much gun violence. And look what happened.
Yeah, right.
So it's just like addiction. It's not only in the suburban areas or in the ghetto.
Right.
You know, it's in Cherry Hill, New Jersey as well. It's in upscale California neighborhoods and communities.
Yeah.
You know, see where the ladies don't run outside on the take. They working at the mall. These ladies work at the mall. So they all take their break at the same time. So they're going to run out to the car and get high before they go back off break. Go out to the car and sniff a little dope. It killed them. So people go outside and find dead people in the parking lot, overdose
of
fentanyl. And they work, so I don't know what happened to the store. Whoever was working in that shift, I know that's kind of crazy.
Well, I guess it's shut down.
Where are you guys at?
They
late coming back from their shift. They outside dead.
Fire them. Yeah, by the way, make sure they punched out so it don't look like they died on company time. No, the lawyer will be sued.
Is anybody working in here? They outside dead. You're going to have to hold on, sir.
We got to go.
I just want to pay for this and go. Man, it's crazy what people have to think about. Hey, John, we got to check out of here.
We do. So let's get a hold of Vicky for next time, okay? Thank you. We're listening to The Recovery Show on Enlightened Radio, www.enlightenedradio.org.
Yeah.
And my God, James, we just talked.
Let's get it done.
All right,
buddy. Great day on purpose, my friend.
Be in touch, buddy. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.